Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to our last session, which is a panel session. I have one important announcement I need to make before we start, and that is that you should have in your email inbox now or very, very shortly a link to a survey about the conference, and we do very much wish you to fill that in. Give us as much information as you can, because that will help us make it better for next year. So if you could look that, and don't throw it away, don't put it into your junk folder, but do fill it out. Obviously, all replies will be treated in confidence, but we'll just use it to build a better conference for the next one, which is coming up in Ottawa in May. So, on this esteemed panel, perhaps I should introduce myself. I'm Marcus Streets. I used to be the security standards officer at nCipher, where I certified one or two hardware security modules. And then I left and joined Good Technology, where I'm director of high security products. And as of Monday, I now work for BlackBerry. And I'll find out what my new job title is when they tell me. Sitting next to me, the gentleman is Douglas Gerbert, who's an enterprise architect and deputy chief technologist at HP Enterprise. We have Tammy Green, who is a senior principal security architect at Bluecoat Systems. On the far end, we have Laurie Mack, who is currently with SafeNet Gemalto, but has worked in almost every role in this industry on both sides. She's poacher turned gamekeeper turned poacher again. And we have Michael Cooper, who is, this is why I have to take a deep breath. Manager of NIST Security Testing, Validation, and Measurement Group. So that means he's responsible for the PIV validation program, the Security Content Automation Protocol, Crypto Algorithm Validation Program, and Crypto Module Validation Program. So basically, he's it. And we're going to try and have a nice, gentle discussion about the changes and try and ask Mike the questions that we know you want to hear. But we will be opening up to questions from the floor towards the end. So, as we all know, the FIPS program is absolutely wonderful, and there's nothing wrong with it and doesn't need to change. But I'm just going to ask the panel, where at the moment, what other validations are you doing around the world? Start with Doug.
We do evaluations from HP just about everywhere. We do a lot here in the US, of course. Mm-hmm. We also do evaluations in Australia. We have some that happen in Canada. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have another one that happens in Europe, in various places there mm-hmm. as well. So a lot of that has to do with CC evaluations, mm-hmm. obviously. And then most of our, of course, FIPS happen, a lot of our FIPS happen mm-hmm. in Canada for the most part.
Yeah.
There we go.
We use U.S., well, not the U.S. scheme. Mm. We don't use NIAID, but we do use people here in the U.S. We use a Canadian scheme. We moved over to Sweden as well as Denmark.
Right.
We're in the CMVP doing FIPS validations. We're also in Europe, in Germany, France. We're also in Asia. We're in Australia, so we're literally around the world doing a variety of evaluations from FIPS mm. to payments to common criteria to others.
It's interesting, none of you mentioned Brazil. I mean, I've done a validation in Brazil.
In Brazil.
and I've had some input with the Japanese scheme. So, Michael, you're the new world ISO standard. Is this going to help us? How's it going to help us?
Well, we hope it will help. The general idea being that many of the vendors have come to NIST over time and asked us for help in solving exactly the problem that it sounds like you guys are alluding to, that you're doing validation processes through different countries and different schemes around the world. More or less, many of the vendors have said, wouldn't it be nice if we could just do one validation and have that accepted around the world? You know, that's obviously a very lofty goal, and we hope to get there. But we thought the first step was at least agreeing on the same standards and the same test methodologies. And if we could start there with the crypto, that at least would be a good step in the right direction.
So, I got a sort of sidebar. Yeah. One of the use cases we have in particular is that we have a particular evaluation that Australia has asked us to come and do on the CC side of things. So they said, you know, we're buying this set of equipment, we want you to do the evaluation here. Luckily, it just so happens that NIAP will accept a PP from Australia. Mm-hmm. So that's a use case we potentially see with the ISO standard, is what if we get into a situation where the government as it happens to be, let's say the UK is a large buyer of something, and they demand that we do the evaluation there using ISO. I know we sort of talked about this in the NIST and CMVP or NIAP calibration, but where, how do you sort of see that for the folks who weren't in that session sort of working if we have to, because of political reasons, do an evaluation in the UK, but still we want to have that product be available for US consumption?
Well, what I would hope would happen, and I can't say that we have it all figured out, to be honest, we don't necessarily have all the experience that NIAP and CC have in the international market space. So we definitely want to start slow and work our way into this and figure out what works and what doesn't work and hopefully learn from the lessons of everybody involved as to how to manage some of these international agreements. But in that specific case, I would hope that maybe then we could talk with England or whatever the scheme is, and see if we can agree on sharing of the data, so that when they get done with the validation, that they would share the data back with us, and we would more or less just second the validation if we agree with it.
When you say share the data, you mean what?
The test report.
The test report?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you wouldn't ask for more data specific to U.S. requirements?
If the validation was being done and it didn't fit U.S., so if the algorithms that were being tested were not U.S. algorithms, then yeah, we would probably look for data that was specific to U.S. algorithms.
Okay.
My concern would be that using the U.K. as a good example, let's say that they only allow algorithms A, B, and C, but A is not allowed for NIAP. Then what does, and they won't allow us, and maybe NIAP says that there has to be a D, but they won't allow it for theirs. Does that mean that me as a vendor, then, that I've got to create two different FIPS mode, one that's a UK FIPS mode, one that's a US FIPS mode, and that could escalate very quickly?
Yeah, I agree, and I hope that we can figure out a way around that. I hope that we can come to a common set of algorithms that are going to be agreed upon around the world. I don't know that I can guarantee that. I think that our program has been, somewhat flexible in how, we've worked with vendors to implement the modules in such a way that, the things that are mandated for use within the U.S. and, as you said, FIPS mode, are mandated when you're in FIPS mode, but there can be other algorithms included in the module. So, conceptually, you could build one product that has all the algorithms in it, as long as you have a mode that restricts, the use of U.S. only when it's in use in the U.S.
I think that I just heard that I'm going to be doing multiple modes.
Yeah, I can see that we may end up with multiple modes or a very complicated mode switch, which turns things on and off.
So along that line, we have this sort of similar problem with the NSA, NSA Suite B. There's no NSA Suite B mode, and they'll tell you that to your face. But we all know that you got to set an algorithm, and it's a checkbox somewhere in an application or that you've set up. That's the NSA Suite B mode, and you turn it on, and there it is. And that meets the criteria. But I think having a better, clearly defined standard of somehow saying that it's either a subset of algorithms or there's a specific, derivative, some way to test for that so that it becomes a simpler process explaining it to the developers, other than there's an NSA Suite B mode, but not really.
Right. Yeah, I can't speak for NSA or how some of their requirements are, but I think that we're pretty explicit when we explain to the labs and the vendors as to kind of what FIPS mode means and what's allowed and what's not allowed. Mm. Uh, I, I think we've had a lot of those conversations with labs over the years.
But we have had it in the past. You know, level one and two, we've had fit smoke by policy. So we could. It's only really when we're going to level three that it's going to be a strict problem. And I know Tammy does go to level three, and I know some of the stuff that we've done. You know, I've done in the past has had this problem that you know, I have to have a level three mode for the US, and then the Germans look scant to say, no, we didn't really want that. But I, from what I'm hearing from you, you're very early on in these discussions, so you've got time to take this on board and go back to them and hopefully get something more flexible for us.
Well, right, yeah. I mean, we don't, other than the international agreement that we have with Canada that we've had for many years, we don't have any other international agreements as of yet. So, and we're just now working through the requirements of what we think are going to be in these international agreements and working out kind of the mechanics of how they will work. So, certainly, that's exactly why we're kind of bringing these topics up at conferences like this, so that we can get feedback from labs, vendors, you know, the whole community, as to what makes sense, what's worked in CC, what hasn't worked, what things should we be focusing on in terms of making it easier for the overall industry and easier for us to get things through validation, you know, so that all of you guys can get your products validated.
When you spoke earlier, you talked about not only the need for an agreement, but also the need for a recognition of trust. What did you mean by that?
Well, more or less, that's a comparison, I guess, in some ways, against the CC method of working with things. So CC operates on the idea that everybody that signs the CCRA agrees to some, you know, basic set of principles, but as a part of that agreement, you know, there's an obligation among all the members that if one member, you know, does some amount of work and some validation, that the other members, you know, have to more or less honor that same validation. So in our viewpoint, we would much rather work on the mechanics of working with another country first and understand kind of who they are, how they work, what their process is like, you know, what kinds of oversight of their labs, how do they actually see the particular problem, and through that interaction the constituent trust that comes with that interaction, that would be part of the basis as to how much oversight we place on that relationship. So let's say, for example, you know, obviously with Canada, since we've been working with them for so long, if they do a validation, you know, sometimes we don't necessarily look at it that hard when, you know, Canada says that we've checked it and we think that this is good. We wouldn't necessarily do that with somebody that we've got a brand new relationship with. We'd certainly want to check everything, but as time goes on and we grow comfortable with the work that they're doing, hopefully that we don't necessarily have to provide as much oversight into every bit of work that they do.
So along the line of that, do you perceive in the same way the CCRA has a producing member and then a consuming member, that potentially there'd be something like this for the ISO standard?
It's possible. I've looked at that scheme, and it has some interesting possibilities. I think that that's probably farther down the road, though. As I said, I think that we want to just start by working with one or two other countries to start with and see kind of what works and you know, grow slowly so that we can kind of figure out, you know, how to expand rationally.
So I think one of the things that is of prime importance to everyone in the hall is the timescale of getting a validation. And ideally, if we move to a multi-scheme solution, that will bring more evaluators on board.
Yes.
Provided you don't have to duplicate the work. So,
right.
But is there going to be a penalty in the short term to get there? Or what do you think?
I don't know if there's going to be a penalty. Obviously, you know, developing those relationships is going to take some time and effort. Understanding how another validating authority in another country that we haven't worked that much with is going to take, you know, some level of you know, continuous effort to just try to understand their perspective and see if there are differences in the way we're interpreting, you know, the particular problem. So maybe that might add a little bit of time and effort. I hopefully not. As we get better at doing it, actually, we're hoping in the long run it actually reduces the amount of time that it takes to get something validated.
My experience with protection profiles has been quite interesting in that we would go to, our first experience was actually going through a Canadian lab, and we thought that that was going to make it much, much easier, and yet it did not. It turned out that in the end, NIAP did not, they needed to do additional validation of the testing that had been done by the Canadian lab, even though the Canadian scheme was set to actually issue the certificate. The U.S. scheme told them that they were not allowed to do so, which, of course, really threw a monkey wrench, and we stopped that process. And so if I take this as an indication that as the process would begin, that there would be additional hiccups like this that may take an extra 2 or 3 months to actually resolve and may actually require additional code changes from the very first scheme that took a look at it and approved it. I would assume that we would have those same sort of hiccups, and as a vendor, that is incredibly concerning to us.
Okay, I don't know that I have a comment as of yet since we haven't actually gone down that road. I hope that we can figure out ways around it, but you know, I can't guarantee you at this point that, you know, something like that couldn't happen. So we'll definitely keep an eye on it and you know, listen for your feedback and see if we can, you know, figure out better ways of coordinating our requirements.
So I've seen in some of the draft documentation that they're planning to have in the FIPS 140-next implementation guidance, again, of course. Mm-hmm. But how do you perceive that interacting with other international nations' version of implementation guidance?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic. I can't say that we have all of this stuff figured out yet. I mean, obviously, in order for us to adopt the next standard, we will have to go through all of our current documents and make them point to the new standard and make sure that all of the language, you know, fits the different requirements that are called out in the new standard. So many of the IGs may not even really be relevant anymore. Some of them may be. We haven't actually really done all of that analysis. At the end of the day, though, the IGs that we have are agreed upon between, you know, U.S. and Canada. I can't necessarily assume that if we sign an agreement with another country that they're necessarily going to see the problem space exactly the same way as us. So I wouldn't necessarily expect them to pick up and use all the same IGs that we have. So that's going to obviously be a topic of discussion in terms of starting these international agreements as to, you know, how do we, you know, maybe that's part of the agreement itself is, do you adopt these IGs as is, or do we need to discuss them and you know, come to some agreement as to how they're interpreted?
It would be very easy for them to get inconsistent,
yes,
very quickly.
Sure.
Which again adds the burden to the vendor who's trying to make up,
right,
trying to match up to these.
Right. And yeah, and part of the point of doing a lot of this stuff is to not allow that to happen.
Right.
But you know, it when you have multiple countries with their own purposes in mind, I mean, there's no silver bullet to making it all, you know, fit perfectly. So we'll do the best we can, but.
With regards to IGs, just for FIPS Next,
mm-hmm,
are you planning, I understood there were going to be two versions, maybe a programmatic version and a technical version. Are you planning to provide those out for public comment, the documents that you're building, and when do you see that happening?
Yeah, sure. The so in terms of when the decision is made by the Department of Commerce to use the ISO standard as our document that we're going to you know, run our conformance program against, you know, presuming that decision is made in a few months' time, when it is made, we'll start a project to update all of our documents. And as a part of updating those documents, we'll definitely put them out for public review and comment.
And the IG document?
Yeah, we've talked about at the conference here as well, that it'll be a NIST IR document. So
NIST IR.
Right. So we'll have a SP 800 series document that will be roughly the equivalent of our CMVP management manual right now, that has kind of all the rules of the road of how we're going to manage the program as well. And then the IG will be a subsequent document that's a NIST IR. And the NIST IR, if you know the NIST document series, FIPS is the highest level, which is commerce level. SPs are more or less approved and ratified at the NIST level, and NIST IRs are the lowest level that are basically we're able to publish within our division.
And they will be sent out for public comment?
Yes, yeah. Yes, they will. Yep.
And when do you expect that?
So within 6 months after the ratifying the new standard.
And then the transition period is planned to be another year after that?
Yeah, so we haven't actually nailed down all these times. I mean, historically, when they went from -1 to -2, it was a total of a year, total amount of time. The first 6 months they spent, getting the documents together, and then the second 6 months they had a period of overlap where you could do either -1 or -2 validations, and then by the end of the year you were supposed to be on -2. So we're using that as a model, but if the feedback from industry is 1 year is too short, we'll certainly listen to that and give some more time. We don't want it to be totally open-ended, but we'll try to be reasonable with industry.
1 year is too short.
Okay. Okay.
So what do you think would be the rapidity with which FIPS 40-2 would be archived off of being valid for use?
Right. So, like I said, the previous model that we had was the transition between -1 and -2, and that period of time was basically the 1 year. So from the time that the new standard was signed, there was a 1 year period of time.
But that was for new validations, and yes. What's existingly validated.
I see. The way things work right now, all of the validations that are out there, -1 or -2, and please correct me, they're all still validated. So we have discussed at this conference, and I think that it's a pretty good idea that we would like to actually start rolling off validations after some period of time. We've proposed 5 years, but we haven't actually made a decision on that yet.
So, okay, I'm going to go down the line here. I mean, Laurie, how old a SafeNet module do you think is still in use?
We have some pretty old modules, and because they're built into the infrastructure, so our customers build them in and they leave them there. They work well. So 5-year time frame may not be a good idea for customers that have these built into the infrastructure and cannot afford to do a complete overhaul of their products on a 5-year cycle.
So and that's fine, and we've discussed scenarios where a 5-year timeline would be too short for specific use cases and specific vendors. What we would hope though is that even if we made the decision to make a 5-year timeline, that we would also have a process by which a vendor can come in basically. I don't know if we've actually talked about it. What all the mechanics are, but what we're hoping is that there would be a low cost in terms of time and energy from the vendor standpoint, way for them to just reassert that nothing's really changed in the particular module and get revalidated.
Thank you.
What does it look like for harmonization of entropy across the different nations? I know we certainly it's been an interesting topic here in the U.S. and in Canada.
I don't know how other countries do it, to be honest. So you guys might actually have a better answer for me on some of that. I know we've been talking to NIAP and you know, trying to make sure that at least within the U.S. that we have our act together, and we're getting feedback, obviously, from many of the vendors that I don't think we do. So we'll definitely keep working on that. We'll try to make sure that our assessment is you know, tuned with their assessment, or even better, that one can be used, you know, in lieu of the other. Mm-hmm. So with regard to other countries, we'll definitely have to cross that bridge when we come to it.
Not that I'm trying to shoot myself in the foot on the argument that I would normally make, but from a security standpoint, when I put that hat on, one of the interesting points that comes up is that we may be creating, let's say we do get like absolute harmony across all the countries. Okay. Wouldn't that be cool? But then have we created a monoculture for algorithms and for entropy, which would mean that one flaw, one thing that we didn't notice, but that maybe some other government agency or some hackers or a mob gang figured out, then affects the whole world, which is, you know, so it's kind of cool, but on the other hand, my security hat is, it's burning my head.
Yeah. I guess has NIST thought about sponsoring any modules to go through, like, you know, I don't know, OpenSSL?
Yeah, actually, so...
They keep stealing my questions.
So we have talked about this, and open source is definitely one of the areas where we feel passionate that it would be really nice if there was an easy way for open source vendors to be sponsored through the program. You know, but at the same time, I don't know that it's necessarily in the purview of NIST to sponsor something. I mean, it seems like a conflict of interest to us. So, you know, why should we sponsor something that we are, you know, inevitably, you know, expected to validate? It seems like it would kind of water down the actual validation. So, but to the extent that, you know, somebody picks up OpenSSL and does a really good job of making sure that it, you know, meets all the requirements, I'd love to see that, yeah.
Okay, so implementation guidance, we touched on it earlier, and input from vendors. So there's some talk earlier on about getting the CMEOF involved in some implementation guidance. You want to talk a few words about that, and then maybe we'll see how everyone else feels about the amount of effort we're going to need to put in to make that work for you.
Yeah, implementation guidance in general is a tough topic area because you know, everybody here knows that our standard is you know, many years old, and it was written at a time, you know, when technology was totally different, and so therefore, you know, we're constantly trying to reinterpret you know, an older standard that was written with pretty generic language to new technologies. And
yeah, I think we got rid of the references to valves and brass gears.
Exactly. So, but that being said, I mean, we have to. This is a constant task to try to implement guidance that makes sense with regard to today's technology and to reinterpret an old standard and try to understand what was its intent when it was written, so that we can hopefully apply the same rigor, you know, based on today's technology. So now, many labs and vendors have talked to us about making a much more regular process out of, you know, reviewing and publishing the implementation guidance. That's something that we've heard, and we haven't actually, you know, done everything that we would like to do yet. That's part of we're hopefully taking the opportunity that when we make the implementation guidance into a NIST IR, we'll be driven by a more normalized publication process, because there's already a process within NIST that, you know, you have to go through certain steps in order to, you know, publish a new document of whatever type, whether it's an SP or an IR. So just based on that structure alone, every time we put in a new IG, we'll have to go through the process, publish it, get feedback, and the like. So we probably won't do it as often, so it won't be as flexible, but it'll be a little bit more predictable.
And again, our concern is when we get into the ISO standard, how do you harmonize the implementation guidance between the various schemes so that we're not running to almost different standards or different ways of implementing the standard, which then would defeat the objective.
Exactly, right. Right now we work, IGs through the two partners that we have, and you know we hopefully come to an agreement on those IGs before they go out. And then if we have more partners, obviously we're gonna have to come up with a better way of adjudicating those IGs so that everybody agrees with the language that goes into it. Otherwise, yeah, like you're saying, what's the point? So,
yeah, I mean, it seems like some of the IGs today can often be just sort of emails that have flown out and have a specific set of guidance come out. But maybe if it was more specific language, like how the CC defines you will use these type of words and this type of phrase and this type of organization, if it was a little more formal, it may make interpretation down the road a bit easier. Has that been considered at all in terms of?
Well, yeah, I mean, so there's an awful lot more that we could do in terms of structure. I think a lot of this just is manpower and effort driven in terms of we just don't have a lot of either. So, we have a few employees at NIST. We're not a very big agency, so, have spent so many cycles in the last years just getting through the validations and the lab audits and those kinds of things that we haven't necessarily spent a lot of time professionalizing all of our processes regarding how we publish the IGs. But we're hoping that by gaining some cycles back from some of the efficiencies that we're trying to build in through automation and the like, that we'll be able to start focusing on some of those kinds of topics.
Oddly, that sounds horribly familiar from our working lives as well. You're far too busy to doing that. That needs to be done to do that, which is important. We've been talking for about a while now, so it's about time we open this up to the floor. So anyone on the floor with any questions? If you don't, I've got some more, so we'll keep chatting. I'm going to throw... So just to quickly repeat the question, because I know this is being recorded and some people might not be able to hear it when they listen back. The question was pollinations require more than FIPS, particularly in purchasing decisions. Is any of that going to get encoded into the new standard or the new guidance?
Well, certainly not in the 19790. I mean, that's already published, and so it's a set standard. But, I mean, the previous discussion that we had in this room with NIST and NIAP, I mean, NIAP is actually doing, validation testing at layers of technology above what NIST is doing, and so that's part of the thought behind some of that relationship is that we, should be able to leverage some of the work that NIAP is doing, and hopefully between, those two programs working closer together, that we'll be able to say to vendors or even other countries that on top of our validation, if you're looking at this particular PP for your use case, that would be a really good idea. So that's what we're hoping to get out of it. But if there's other ways to organize based on ideas that other countries have or what vendors have seen out there, we're all ears.
Yes. Terry.
Well,
to me, like you're saying, that it's kind of like it's all a lot of the focus has been on this and that, and I understand that, but it's kind of like we'll have bilateral agreement with Canada and maybe Japan. It's like, what's going on there?
Well, so more or less, the U.S. NIST is saying that we're going to create these bilateral agreements with other countries. Right now, we have a bilateral agreement with Canada. So we're going to extend that model to other countries. It's up to Canada how they want to interact with any of those other partners. You know, it's not necessarily for us to say. What we're going to define is how we're going to interact with these other partners and what we're going to accept. We've had some conversations with you know, Canada, CSE, on exactly what are they going to accept. There's not an assumption on our part that even if we take some results from somebody else and we validate something from some other country, that doesn't bind Canada into making that same exact decision. I think the thing that you're pointing out is the definition of CMVP for so many years was U.S. and Canada. Well, so in these other bilateral agreements, that definition may need to change. Well, the CMVP, I don't know that, so at some level that's more or less a policy statement. I'm trying to work out the mechanics of how do I work with other countries. You know, there will be a CMVP, exactly what the definition of, you know, is that going to be U.S. and Canada forever? I don't know.
Nithya has a question.
Well, certainly, yeah. I mean, if test tools can be shown to be obviously objective evidence that can be reused anywhere, and other countries agree that the output of this particular test tool is acceptable, I think that's definitely a good thing. So we definitely have plans on redeveloping our testing tools, and so if through that effort, we can make it more widely available, and other countries want to use it. We're open to that.
Doug, do you have?
Yeah, I was just going to ask. I know in a lot of RFPs, even today, as recently as a few months ago, the language that is used in there, especially around FIPS, is often not correct or is sort of not following along the essence of what it is. For example, I saw one RFP that asked for all levels of FIPS 140-2. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, is there going to be, as we move into FIPS 140-next, is there a plan to do any kind of additional push into the government itself of expanding the knowledge among the contracting officers and the RFP writers, what this really is, why they need it, and how to actually put the language in properly to acquire it?
I can't say that we have any formal plans as of yet, but yeah, it is one of our responsibilities to try to educate the rest of the federal government as to what the requirements are. So we'll definitely take that as an action to go, whether it's to the CIO Council or to each individual agency and talk to their procurement officials. I mean, we'll come up with some plan for trying to educate them on the new rules.
And Canada will do that as well. Have we lost?
Yes, that's the royal we of Canada there.
There was some discussion yesterday, I think, about protection profiles being referenced with respect to the ISO standard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was confused as to why they would need to be referenced, why we would pull protection profiles into this. Can you comment?
Well, right now there's an ongoing effort within CMVP to look at some of the protection profiles that are out there based on the idea that there was a link historically between CMVP and EAL2 for certain operating system level protections you know, that are above the level of the module itself. So we wanted to try to update, you know, those links to more contemporary, references that would be, you know, valid today. So we've been working with NIOP around that. They gave us three different protection profiles to look at. I think that we've already agreed on two, and one we're still kind of talking about. But you know, the general idea being that, you know, the concepts that were true in those EAL types of requirements should still be in existence in the protection profiles today. Now, with regard to the new standard, an awful lot of the requirements that are in the standard that were also in the EAL 2 days were actually taken and put directly into the ISO standard. So there's not inherently a reference to a protection profile within the standard. But that being said, you know, the things, they're additive in that, and this is in general, this is one of the reasons that we've talked about working with NIOP, is that the protections and the testing that we're doing, you know, within CMVP and CAVP are pretty low level types of testing, and that NIOP is doing testing at layers above the algorithm and the module. So, you know, presumably you could say that, you know, you would get validated to ISO 19790 and your module would be valid, and then you could take those test outputs and apply to CC for a particular protection profile and use the results as a part of the protection profile.
So the notion is not that I would have to have an OSPP common criteria certification in order to get FIPS. That would not be required.
No, right now with FIPS 140-2, we're just looking to replace the link to EAL2 for the higher levels of, we have the security levels 1 through 4. There was a link that for the higher levels, was it just software or? I can't remember. Okay, so for software, that you'd have to have an EAL level 2 OS to refer to based on getting that validation. So we're just looking to replace that.
So the replacement would be that I would need to do my common criteria and my FIPS at the same time.
Right, and that's a near term replacement. But
so wow, no. No.
The replacement is that if you have a software project and you go for a higher level of FIPS certification, then the operating system you are using under the software module of yours should be CC validated.
Yes.
So it's the same.
Okay, so if I have a hardware appliance then... with my own operating system, then
if you don't have a general purpose operating system, it's never applied. So it only applies to when you're running on a general purpose operating system, where you may have other programs in it. And it's to give that assurance that the other programs can't interfere with the crypto module.
And as a vendor, I would like to make sure that I would be able to do my FIPS validation or my ISO validation, whatever we want to call that, first, and then be able to stage common criteria using a protection profile second. trying to do both at the same time is would be very, very difficult.
So along the same sort of line of thought, I know today the NDPP or NDCPP, the Network Device Protection Profile, to start that, you need to have your CAVP certificates done. Mm-hmm. So moving into FIPS 140-next, this is probably a NIAP question, which I don't know if we have NIAP here, but in terms of that relationship, would you see sort of a similar guidance, or would hopefully not have to finish your FIPS 140-next before you started your CC?
Yeah, no, well, yeah, I agree. That's probably more of a NIAP question, but I would imagine since the CAVP validation is really, you know, not something that's going to take a lot of time, they would hopefully maintain that same relationship. Yeah.
Well, we're running out of time, so I'm going to let you want to make any comments from the Canadian view of the world? I'll take that as a no. So I'm going to ask the panelists. Alan Mike has been talking a lot. You know, what do they think? What do they think of the conversation? And are you optimistic? So start with Laurie.
I am optimistic. What I see is a real change, I guess, in the CMVP is the idea of bringing in vendors and listening. The idea of potentially having workshops, being transparent. Listening about the transition so that you take into account the vendor needs, the customer needs, and that this becomes a partnership as opposed to just a one-sided type of a delivery. Well, I'm enthusiastic about it. I do see lots of problems and challenges in the future with programmatic issues that we spoke about today, but I think if you continue on the path of the transparency and collective working towards something, the objective, then I think you'll get there.
Tammy? I'm
guardedly optimistic. I am a pessimist. I like the international flair of this, of bringing people together. I think that can actually make us produce more secure products. You know, with the brain power from all over, if we're all talking about algorithms and entropy, we've got to be better than where we are today, because there are more people talking about it, more people thinking about it. So I really like that part of it. I like that we're being invited to the table. That's really nice as a vendor. I worry very much about the changeover as things begin to move, similar to for common criteria. It's been very difficult. It decreases how fast we can move. It increases how much money we spend. And so I'm already thinking about going back and saying we're going to need some more budget, I think, for something like this. And that's concerning, but if we can get there, then it's worth it.
Yeah, I think probably what we're going to see is a huge rush of everybody trying to get their FIPS 140-2 certs before the timeout period.
Yeah, I remember that huge lump when -1 went away.
Yeah, so I think probably what might be helpful would be, you know, getting a subset of vendors together to try to work through products early on, maybe as soon as the one FIPS 140-next comes out, to show that you can actually get products through the pipeline and provide some of that initial evidence and work out the kinks before we start really tripping over everyone's feet and hitting issues where all of a sudden you have to cancel your certification because it won't be accepted somewhere.
Well, I'm sure we could actually carry on talking for another half hour, but I know everyone has got homes to go to. So I'm going to say thank you to Laurie, to Tammy, to Doug, and especially to Mike. Thank you to all coming. Do remember to fill out your surveys, and we will see you all in May in Ottawa. And thank you and good night.